Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. We have another great show for you this morning. Today, part four of our series, The State of the Black Church. We're going to delve into a host of areas, including the gospel music industry. I have three very knowledgeable guests in the studio to help me ferret through some of the tough questions regarding the gospel music industry, as well as the state of the Black Church, and of course, the many challenges it faces. Get ready for a very provocative discussion on the state of the Black Church here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Charlotte's Inspiration Station. Back with me this morning is the lovely Miss Melanie Pratt. Of course, Melanie is heard here on Praise Monday through Saturday from 2 to 7 p.m. Also joining me is Mr. Christopher Gray of The Gray Spot here on Praise. Chris's show can be heard every Sunday afternoon from 2 to 8 p.m. Also joining me is Mr. B. Encouraged himself, gospel artist, Pastor William Becton. Pastor Becton is the host of The William Becton Show here on Praise on Saturday from 10 to 2 p.m. and Old School Sundays from noon to 2 p.m. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining me this morning. This is part four of our series, The State of the Black Church, and we left off talking about celebrity in the church, which would, of course, be a perfect segue into the music industry, and I want to get your perspective of the industry because I think it's important. All three of you have your own particular shows on our station. Talk a little bit about today's gospel music and how it informs what you do on the air.
I think gospel music is a wonderful, wonderful music. You know what I mean? I think that, spreading the goodness of Jesus and the worship and the worth of Jesus and how wonderful he is, I think is such a wonderful, wonderful thing. I think as a musical person, I love different styles of music. Mm-hmm. And I think as churches grow, I think we've got to be open to different styles of music.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily mean that the message changed, but the different styles, whether, you know, I remember back in the day, you would play certain things in church, you know, that's the devil's chord. He playing the devil's music.
That's what they said.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A minor third or, you know, major, minor, you know, none of those cards is devil cards. You know what I mean? It's a card. You know what I mean?
But what fed into that perspective?
Well, I think what happened is a lot of times over the years, a lot of the music that we've heard on radio, really talented musical people, and they've used their music more for love music or, you know, they call it club music, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so if the church, for whatever reason, heard anything that sounds similar to what they related to club, mm-hmm. then, did you play at the club last night? You know what I mean? You know, that's the devil music. You know what I mean? Yeah. Did you hear what he was playing during the offering? Mm-hmm. You know, I think we've got to learn. So I guess what I'm kind of overall saying, I think we as church, we've got to learn to understand the different styles of music, mm-hmm. and don't be so opinionated. I think that's a big issue with church and the world, period. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think gospel music, if you be really open with it, you can reach a lot of people. You know, me singing Amazing Grace may not work for everybody.
Right.
It may work for some, but I may have to flip my chord progressions or kind of change the arrangement a little bit to catch somebody else.
Right.
Nothing's wrong with it. As long as we can get to the heart of the people, mm-hmm. to get them to Christ, do what you got to do.
Melanie, you've established a bevy of relationships with folks in the gospel music industry. How do you incorporate and nurture those relationships to bolster the tenor of your own show?
You know, I kind of don't. My relationships in the industry really kind of preceded my radio days. And my show is just really the benefactor of the roots of those relationships that I've had throughout the years. And I don't really do anything specific to cultivate things for the show. I just maintain my relationships. And that means when I call on people, you know, my record is good. My credit is good, so to speak. And when I need something or want to hear something first, then I'm able to do that because we have true relationship and right relationship.
Now, Pastor Becton, how does the gospel music of today, how does it inform what you do on your show, The William Becton Show?
It's interesting because music is such a, it's a means of communication, and it's vast. And it's an honor to be a part of the Radio One team. We identify with a certain demographic, and our music content reaches a certain demographic, but understanding that we're creative entities that speak to the world. Mm-hmm. And so, again, when we say gospel or inspirational music, you know, I know Chris, I know as well as myself, you know, my music identifies to an additional demographic. And so one of the challenges for me in radio is to make sure that my personality, or I cater my personality while I'm on the air to a specific demographic.
Right.
That's good practice, because uh-huh. that's the reason why we have four gospels.
Yeah.
You know, we have four gospels with some of the same parables in each of the synoptic gospels. Why do we have some of the same parables in different gospels? Because they minister to different types of people.
Right.
You
right.
know, Matthew is written to a certain type of person, to Jewish descent. Mark was written with a Roman audience in mind. Luke was written to a Greek audience. And John was written to an intellectual audience. So you have these four gospels written to different types of persons. And so me on radio, having been exposed to a broad perspective of religious music, is Word of Faith communities, other non-denominational and people who do not look like me or don't have my shade, being able to minister to those. But while I'm on air, while for 10 to 2 on Saturdays, 12 to 4 on Sundays, I have to cater what I do to a certain, and that is great practice, because Paul says, I become all things to all men that I might win some.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, but I might win some.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, you're best known for your hit record, Being Courage, as well as other records. Talk to us a little bit about your work and how gospel music is impacting the church altogether.
Yeah, it is. You know, every experience breeds another opportunity to perfect a way of communicating the mysteries of God.
Mm-hmm.
My new project, which has been my new project for many years now, because I haven't released the project in some time.
I can attest to this. I did hear some,
yeah.
and it is absolutely wonderful. Can't wait to hear it on the air.
It's a collage of different influences. At the time, I was an associate pastor at a multicultural church, and so when I wrote this record, it was written for people not just from the Afro-American perspective or Afro-American gospel, black gospel music. So there are other forms, other idioms that collage a certain musical expression. Now, sometimes I take a lot of criticism for that, because my largest success in the music industry to date has been Being encouraged. That was a certain sound. And a lot of times in gospel music, you are labeled from the perspective of is that's all that you can do. I'm sure Chris can attest to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, people, okay, that's he does this kind of music. No, I'm a writer, I'm a producer, I'm an educator. I like to incorporate many different facets, and so this new project, it exposes another shade. And again, I've taken a lot of criticism, but that doesn't sound well. What is it that you on one end, and then you expose it to another demographic of people, and they're calling me Motown.
Well, let me throw a provocative question out there. Do you think that the gatekeepers of the industry are preventing new talents, and even talents such as yourself, from being able to let the listeners make the judgments about the kinds of music you're creating?
There used to be a time where I was extremely critical with no uninformed, ignorant. When I mean ignorant, just void of understanding of what the job of a gatekeeper is. Now, I sit on a different side of the table. And obviously, when I present something, I want all the gatekeepers to open the gate. But this is one thing that has given me peace. God is the one that gives the gift.
Mm-hmm.
The creativity comes from the well of God. And if you're plugged up to the well of God and He releases something to you, He has already designed and designated a demographic to hear that.
Right, right.
So I have found peace in understanding the position of the gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm.
The gatekeeper's job is to let whatever God says in at that time, and if they don't let it in, that might not be the area for this particular offering. Well, for me, I have to, here's the piece. God, if you gave it to me, there is a season and time for it. You know, it's no use for me being mad at a gatekeeper, you know, because the gatekeeper's job is to let what God says in at the
same
time.
Well, you know, you and I have had this discussion many times, and I'm one of those who will look at it from a secular perspective and start getting one of those batting rams and kicking down those doors.
Yeah. And it's not that I haven't had that emotion, but I found peace in understanding the job of the gatekeeper.
Because
the job of the gatekeeper is to let in the gate what that demographic needs at that time.
Now, Chris, well, let me ask you. I mean, you have this deep and resonant voice.
Man, I'm envious of it too, man. I'm trying to talk like Christopher
Craig. I mean, and it comes so well over the air.
It does, man.
Breeze 100.9.
Yeah. It's the great spot, Christopher Craig. Yeah, you know.
As a producer, as a writer, being so intricately involved in the industry, what is it that, if you had your druthers, that you would change about the industry?
Actually, I would want the industry, and when I say the industry, some of your head execs, if you will, in the music industry that kind of call a lot of the shots, you know what I mean, before the music actually hits the public, if you will.
Yeah.
It's to be more open and think more out of the box than being so closed-minded. Wim said something earlier about being ahead of your time, and I've heard that many times myself before. You know, people say, well, hey, you know, man, I went back and listened to some of your old stuff. Man, why don't you re-release that?
Right.
And I'm like, dude, I'm somewhere else now. You know, I got some new stuff.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean?
And because they're stuck on, you know, some of the old stuff. Say, man, you're so ahead of time. You know, man, play that. You know, they call me on Sundays, you know, on my show. Mm-hmm. Can you play some of your music? You know, you play everybody else. I want to hear your music. Mm-hmm. You know, that song from back in the day, that's still current now, you know. Mm-hmm.
But there's a mix of pride, and pride might be the wrong term, but you are proud that you produce some really great stuff that people want to hear.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, anybody. And if you said you didn't, you would be lying. Right, you know what I mean? Right. Anybody love to hear encouragement.
That's
you know,
right. That's right.
They don't even fake it. You know what I mean?
You want to hear that. You're the man. Thank you very much.
You know what I mean? You want to hear that because, you know, you do music and you love music. You know God has given you the gift of music. But you love hearing how blessed people are about music. And that's why I said earlier, I think that people should be more open as it relates to the industry heads as well. When I produce a record, a lot of times I approach my record with different styles of music. So I'm coming from different places, you know, and sometimes it's confusing, so they say, to the industry as it relates to some of the heads. In my concerts on my records, I do some quartet, I do some choir stuff, I do some small group stuff, some contemporary stuff, some traditional stuff. And when I leave that arena or that church, every age group has gotten something that they were blessed by. Well, the industry heads, they seemingly confused. Like, we like all your music. It's great. You know, do we put you out and market you as a quartet singer because the quartet song is hot? Or do we market you as the contemporary artist? And so, again, I think because we have so many different people in the world, somebody might like old school, somebody like new school. I think the industry has to be more open and let the people enjoy the music rather than you opinionate my music before it gets to the people. Because what you think as the head of the company, you're not buying a million copies of my record.
That's right.
People is buying a million copies of my record.
Now, I have to be honest with you, Melanie. I have arrived at this conclusion primarily because of what I've seen, particularly doing some of the award shows. And of course, I'm not alone in this conclusion, but there seems to be some suggestion that
gospel music has become too commercialized. The glitz, the glamour, the celebrity seems to be the standard fare, at least according to some folks. What are your thoughts about that?
I think if you're looking for gospel on an award show, what is an award show but commercial? I think that in order for gospel music to stay organic for you personally or for you personally or for you personally, you have to have it be meaningful to you in another forum. What I see on an award show is an extension or an extra to what I experience on church on Sunday or what I experience in my car and what I choose to listen to and what I choose to make personal in my worship. Because I see it on TV, on a Pillsbury commercial or on a reality TV show or an award show, that doesn't necessarily bother me because it's rooted elsewhere for me. And that is a potential outreach to someone else, for someone else. I mean, clearly, I think that there are forums and expressions that can go too far and be too much. But again, it's just like everything else. I mean, what is organic and simple anymore? Nothing. And that is from, you know, your orange juice comes in five different flavors with pulp and vitamins and injections of strawberry flavoring, you know, and I'm, that sounds like a ridiculous example, but I'm really saying literally things that could be organic are not any longer. And it's up to you to make sure that the satisfaction, the fulfillment that you need comes because of the time that you spend with it and you allowing it to be authentic and organic in your life, in your way. You want organic orange juice, get some oranges. You want authentic gospel worship.
But you folks have been on the stage, and we're going to wrap this portion of the show up, and then we're going to move into a more controversial issue. You folks have been on the stage. Do you think that there is too much glitz and glamour in the gospel music industry? I just wanted to get your perspective on that.
Well, the gospel music industry is what it is. It's a gospel music, and it is a revenue generating machine that uses the foundation of music as its draw, as its bait. I have since been frustrated with certain components I'm no longer frustrated with them because I recognize who I am. Chris had a great point. You know, don't change who you are. Write music that is unique to your gifting. Stay true. Maze said that. Frankie Beverly said that last year at the BET Awards. Don't change who you are. In other words, once you realize the most dangerous individual is the individual that knows who he or she is and who does not allow their person, their gifting, knowing who you are, why you are, and what you're called to do is the most provocative thing that you can accomplish in life.
Now, gentlemen, lady, as you know, the church is grappling with the issue of same-sex marriage. It has been the topic of discussion in this country for quite some time, but as we know, recently the Supreme Court has made a bevy of decisions regarding this issue. Let me get your perspective on this issue, particularly as it relates to the politically divisive issue that it has become.
Well, let me say it this way, because I think sometimes topics like this can be so, what's the word I would use?
Divisive.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean?
Such a big word.
Yeah, divisive.
Divisive, but divisive.
He came up with the word. But from my perspective, I think that a man should be married to a woman. And I think a woman, of course, should be married to a man. Now, of course, with the way the laws are changing, there are some people in the world that would disagree with me, and we see that. It's been on television quite a bit here lately.
Sure.
I think for me, and again, this is me talking, I think it's confusing to the new generation that's growing up. I have a son. I have a daughter. And so I don't want to confuse them on, I don't want my son to be confused on your role as a man, my daughter's role as a woman. And so I would never promote same-sex marriage. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Again, I know that it gets controversial with a lot of people.
Now, let me get your thoughts on this. We're seeing in the larger Christian family the issue of same-sex marriage dominating the national discussion. What are your thoughts about how the so-called Black church has handled this issue?
Well, the Black church is having a tough time, and I understand why. We are challenged with the balance between being compassionate and serving and dealing with what the Bible refers to as certain sins. And first of all, we can't isolate and treat this sin different than that sin. That's the first challenge we're having. But second of all, I remember a few months ago when we were dealing with Amendment 1, and we were challenged because they lumped several issues together and we were forced to choose. And I remember sorting through this in my mind, and I said, you know, wow, anybody who acts like this is a simplex issue, or that the solution is simple, is not being honest. And at that time, I remember reflecting on the story in the Bible about the woman at the well, and that when Jesus approached her, he gave her what she needed first. He, of course, ultimately said, hey, I know what you're doing. I know it's sin. I know, you know, and he told her to go and sin no more. But he gave her what she needed first. And I think that if we focus on that example of Christ, then it will simplify some of these issues for us. Our job is to serve and to show compassion first. That is our primary call.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I'm looking at it from the perspective of a free and democratic society. Okay. And one of the issues for me is the vitriol that is expressed particularly by right-wing conservatives in this country, and is used as a political football, particularly around election time. And I am mindful, and certainly you folks are mindful of the notion that because we are not a theocracy, because we live by the Constitution in terms of our country and what we are led by in terms of a free and democratic society, the issues that really resonate with me is, why is there so much vitriol around an issue that is totally separate from the church, if you will?
How is it separate from the church? I'm confused.
Well, for instance, if gays want to marry, shouldn't they have the same
rights
as those of us who are in the church?
I understand. Now, it sounded a little like the initial question you were asking was from a Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. That's the way that I interpreted the question being asked. On the premise of should someone that is of a homosexual persuasion be allowed to do whatever. On the premise of that, I say, now this is going, I'm pretty sure my pastor friends listening to me are going to, before you jump to conclusions, listen to my point. Yes, they should be allowed to do, make whatever decision or choice they want to make. Now, understand what I'm saying. I'm saying God gives us the right to choose life or death. He says, listen, right, there's life or death. Before you have placed life or death. And then he answers the question. He says, look, I'm telling you to choose life. Mm-hmm, it's going to be more beneficial for you to choose life. But he does afford us the opportunity to choose or select the free will. Mm-hmm. So if your question is from the premise of free will, yes, every individual should have the right to make a free will choice. Because if they don't have a right to make a free will choice, and that becomes a dictatorship. However, if you're asking the question from a spiritual perspective or a Christian perspective, obviously my position or my take is, for this cause shall a man leave home and cleave to his wife. Mm-hmm. You know, so my perspective is going to be to endorse scripturally a man and woman in marriage. But it depends on how you ask the question.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for me too, as I said earlier, I think a man should be married to a woman. While at the same time, I know in my concerts and those that's there, you know, the fan base, if you will, I see it. And so, you know, we can act like we don't see what we see. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I see it. And so I understand that we have everybody on different pages as it relates to, you know, their sexuality. So I don't. In my concert, I don't go into the mode of trying to condemn any one person or anybody as it relates to that. What I try to display at my concerts is the love of Christ.
Well, let me push back on just one issue, and that is the idea that marriage, the biblical standard, and within biblical standard of marriage is between one man and one woman.
Sure.
And of course, that is always heralded at individuals who support gay same-sex marriage or what have you. So is the question on the table, is the biblical standard of marriage between one man and one woman? And we'll ultimately have to close out the show.
Absolutely. And that's what I wanted to clarify in my comments to make sure I clarify that. As a preacher of the gospel, I'm endorsing the biblical standard. I preach the company line. Not only do I preach it, I live it. That's what I believe. On the premise of an individual having the right to choose the biblical line or not.
But if the biblical standard of marriage is between one man and one woman, how do you explain Jacob having four wives, or Abijah having 14 wives, or Esau having three wives, if the biblical standard of marriage is between one man and one woman? And I only point that out to demonstrate the hypocrisy of individuals who will toe that line, and I'm not calling you a hypocrite,
no.
But when it's used for political purposes and we open up scripture and we learn that Lamech had two wives, and that Gideon had many wives.
Well, that's easy.
You cannot make that claim.
No, it's easy to explain that. It's very simple.
You can explain it, but you can't make the claim that it is simply between one man and one woman.
Absolutely, I can. Everything in the Bible is true. Everything in the Bible is not necessarily right. Abraham had many wives,
sure,
but who did the promise come through?
The promise
came through, so it does not negate what God said. For this cause shall a man leave home and cleave to his wife.
Right.
God's perspective was always one. Now, were there certain things that were allowed? Yeah, there were certain things that were allowed. And guess what? There were certain conflicts, there were certain punishments, and there were certain confusions that entered into the family structure when there were multiple situations going on. So God's endorsement never changed. See, and I think that's a problem with many, and I'm not speaking to you, but with many who look at the Bible and they will attempt to take the scripture and twist it. Well, this person had many wives. Yeah, but that individual had many problems too.
Yeah.
Because God's endorsement was always a man and his wife. And the promise came through a line.
Well, and certainly appreciate the clarification. And as we close out, particularly on this issue, how do we minimize the vitriolic perspective on this issue? Because that's important to me. We may have these differences in how folks should approach it, but I'm more concerned about it being used as a political football and, again, lessening the vitriol that's always standard fare when this conversation comes up.
I think that's what you do. And I think that's the brilliance of your gifting. Whenever I've heard your interviews, you've always taken these challenging issues and brought them to the forefront that causes us to rethink and be definitive about our approach. So I believe the answer to your question is pretty much what you do here at Radio 1.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to say thank you, Ron. I think what you're doing is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And
yes.
It does open up another dialogue of things that people think but won't talk about sometimes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but I do think those of us that serve in church, whether you are pastor, bishop, minister, music, whatever your role is in church, I do think as it relates to these subjects and all biblical subjects, if you will, we really be honest and truthful about the word rather than adding up or adding our own personal situation to it. Because, you know, we at church, man, we'll take a scripture and turn it around and use it for something we want to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Beating your wife.
Yeah.
And,
you know what I mean?
Committing adultery. We can find something in scripture to substantiate that deed.
So I say to all of us, those of us that are part of church and that teach and in front of people, let's make sure that we teach people the true word, not what we want them to do, but what God says.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, gentlemen, lady, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this very controversial issue and to talk about the state of the Black church. I think it's important that we, as a community and as a family of Christians, that we talk about the issues that are resonating within the family, and I certainly appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us, Ron.
Amen. Thank God bless you. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I want to again thank Melanie Pratt, Christopher Gray, Pastor William Beckton, Reverend Myra Bellinger, Radio One's Wanda Reed, and Dr. Joel Bryant for joining me to ferret through some of the important issues confronting the Black Church. The entire series, The State of the Black Church, is available on our Praise Charlotte website. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Thank you so much for tuning into this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.